Welcome to the Kelly Patrick Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. In today's episode, I am joined by my cousin, Kyle Dugan. Kyle is a Major League Baseball guru. And when he compliments your favorite Major League Baseball team, you know it's authentic. And he's been real high on the Cincinnati Reds lately. And so I thought we needed to have him back on, talk about the Terry Francona-led Reds team, who's just been hot as can be lately. We also touched on some NBA action, a little bit of NCAA, college basketball, and NFL. If you enjoyed today's episode, I ask that you please send some health insurance referrals my way, specifically someone who needs help with Medicare and the states of Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, Florida, or Illinois. Can be someone who's going on to Medicare soon, or perhaps they're already on Medicare and they could use help with their prescription drug coverage or their Medicare Advantage coverage or supplement coverage. I represent all the top carriers in those states, and I would love your referrals. I want to thank Louisville Combat Academy, located at 7908 Beulah Church Road. I attend a kickboxing class there every Thursday at 6:30 p.m., led by Graham Gordon. They also have 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu, great kids program and women's program, and of course, very strong MMA program led by Jason Y. As always, I want to thank Matt McCarthy, the producer for The Kelly Patrick Show, livesportscaster.com, and Veercast Digital Media. Enjoy today's show. Welcome to the Kelly Patrick Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. In today's episode, I am joined by returning guest, my cousin, Kyle Dugan, is on the line with me. Kyle, how are you today?
Doing great. Always love talking some baseball with you. Thanks for having me.
I figured now would be as good a time as ever, being the Cincinnati Reds, our father's, you know, childhood favorite team, is off to their best start since 2003. So, although they suffered a difficult loss tonight, they are still sitting at, let's see, what's the record right now? 19-11, which for the Cincinnati Reds faithful, all things considered, that's a heck of a start to a season.
Yeah, it's been a heck of a start for the entire NL Central. I think everybody in the NL Central right now is above 500. But, I mean, the Reds, it's all coming together for them this year. They also lead the MLB in bullpen ERA, which you never think about the Cincinnati Reds and having a good bullpen. That is usually their Achilles heel, blowing games late. But they've had some incredible. Brock Burke has a 0.69 ERA. Where are these guys coming from? Santillan has also been pitching well, Pagan. So the bullpen's been incredible. And then the starting pitching's been great. And you don't even have Hunter Green yet, yeah, who is going to be coming back in July. There's so many ways we can go and talk about the Reds. The hitting has been incredible, especially at that top end of the lineup. Sal Stewart basically looks like a right-handed Joey Votto.
Jeez.
So there's a lot to look forward to this year. The Reds look like they might be the best team in the NL.
Wow. It's so wild when I get engaged with the Reds this early, which doesn't happen often, admittedly, to where I'm this tuned in. You live and die. It's such a long sport. I know you follow baseball over the years closer than I do. You know, 162 games season. You're going to have some ups and downs, even when you have a great season, right? So the Reds lost tonight. They had a rough, I think it was 13-2. Was the score of the game they dropped tonight to the Rockies. So you feel up, you feel like things are going good, and then you have a rough patch. Looking at the big picture, though, you mentioned Hunter Green will be coming back in July. So we've got about 2 months or so before we get arguably the ace back in the rotation. You mentioned Sal Stewart. What about Ellie De La Cruz? I know you're someone who follows the entirety of the MLB, but what has his reputation been up until this season, and what are your thoughts on Ellie De La Cruz thus far?
Well, I had a chance to go down here in Miami, where I'm stationed, and see four games of the Marlins versus Reds. So I got an up-close view of Ellie De La Cruz, and it's no secret. He's extremely fast. So basically, whenever he gets on base, if your catcher doesn't have the pop time, doesn't have the ability to throw him out at second, he creates havoc on the bases. So any type of wild pitch, speeding up the pitcher in the pitch clock era. I mean, he's somebody that not only has a over 900 OPS, which means he's hitting the ball, but it's not just for singles. He's hitting doubles, triples, those extra bases, and it's because he's so fast. So to have a guy at a premier position like that, you know, is really a huge boost. You think of the guys who could give you a 900 OPS in the NL. You think of your Juan Soto's, your Freddie Freeman's. Ellie De La Cruz is doing that at a premier position, and he bulked up over the offseason. He looks a little bigger this year. Maybe some, you know, human growth hormones or something. As a Marlins fan, hey, test him.
Yeah.
Test him. But he looks a little bigger this year. He's got, I think, 9 or 10 home runs, over 900 OPS. So he's extremely quick, even though he's thickened up a little bit this year. But, I mean, he's a guy that when he gets on base, the opposing team is basically pissing down their leg.
Baseball is such a cool sport, man. There's so many different angles you can break down. Any ones, we could talk just about the Reds, and if we really knew our stuff, we could dive into this from 1,000 different angles just based on the beginning to the season. One stat I saw, Ellie De La Cruz is the first major leaguer since 1900 with 10-plus homers and 8-plus stolen bases before May.
Wow.
So a unique combination of base running and speed, but also power.
And we had Shohei Ohtani 2 years ago, went 50-50. Jeez. So he did 50 home runs, 50 stolen bases. We had never seen that before. We saw 40-40. You know, remember
Ricky
Canseco?
Yeah, okay.
Back in the day, just juice to the – speaking of juice to the gills, Canseco is doing 40-40. I mean, you talk about that stat, Kelly. That sounds like Ellie De La Cruz is on his way to maybe a 40-40, 50-50 type year. And, you know – the way the ball flies in Cincinnati, he stays healthy this year. Could be looking at a historic type season for Ellie De La Cruz for sure.
Also, as you said, Sal Stewart. Another angle is I read where Terry Frank. Okay, what are your thoughts on Terry Francona before I jump into that? You're a baseball junkie. You know the sport across the MLB much better than I do. We all know Terry Francona got busted sending shirtless photos of himself to some guy's wife. Let's not dwell on that. On the field, I want to hear, what are your thoughts on Terry Francona?
Thanks for setting the ground rules.
Yeah,
sure,
please, let's not focus on that. I mean, a man's a man. He's going to do what he does. You know, that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah, we don't want to bring up Mike Vrabel and Diana Rossini.
No, we don't need to dwell on that stuff. We're not a trashy show.
No, we're not like that at all. But Terry Francona is a guy that... he's an old school guy, and I actually thought the game had passed him by. You know, he was on the Cleveland Guardians.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Over the Reds, and I was like, he's with a young team, and these days we're looking at analytics. You know, we're post-Moneyball. We're even beyond that, and I thought he was going to be a disaster in Cincinnati because he's not going to be able to adjust. He's going to go totally on feel. And when you look at some of the best managers in baseball right now, they're actually being handed a lineup card from the front office, from the nerds in the front office. But I'll tell you what, Terry Francona is pushing every single button this year. From the games that I've watched, again, leading the MLB in bullpen ERA has a lot to do with the pitchers, but it also has a lot to do with the bullpen usage. I'll give you an example. There's a left-handed pitcher for the Cincinnati Reds called, his name is Sam Moll. He's kind of an average left-handed pitcher, but the way Terry Francona has used him in certain positions, like against a team like the Marlins or like the Dodgers, where he's coming in to face specific blocks of lefties and keeping out the platoon hitting right-handers has been really successful. So like when the Marlins played the Reds, Francona did a really good job of keeping our right-handed hitting our left-handed hitting hitters on the bench, utilizing his left-handed bullpen pitchers at the right time. So that's a long-winded way of saying he's actually just got a tremendous feel for the game. He's seen a ton of games before, and he's running circles around these guys who are getting printouts from the front office. So I think he knows when to bring guys in at certain types, certain moments in the game. And he's also got a captain's chair. I don't know. Have you seen this? He's got like the boat chair he's like sitting in at the
I did see that. Yeah, yeah. Is that common?
I don't know if he's got a hemorrhoids issue or what, but he looks comfortable sitting down there. And he's got a big wad of tobacco in there. And he's
always does. Manager,
doing it the right way. Gotta love it.
I may be wrong, but I think he gave up the tobacco. I think now maybe that's gum or something. Let me see. Terry Francona. I think he may have had like some bad issue from too much tobacco. Let's see if he quit tobacco. I'm Googling it real quick.
He's had so many health issues.
Yeah, he chewed tobacco for so long. Okay, looks like maybe he does. But now sometimes he uses massive amounts of bubble gum as a substitute, and his face challenges stopping. So maybe he goes back to the tobacco. Interesting thing here. Once again, you follow baseball closer than I do, Kyle. The Reds have a catcher named Jose Trevino. Tonight, they're getting their ass kicked. 13-0, headed into the eighth inning. Terry Francona, as you say, the wizard of managing the bullpen, he takes this little 5'9" catcher, sends him out there. He gave up five earned runs in the eighth inning. But this is the second, maybe the third time I've seen Francona use a catcher as a pitcher in Major League Baseball. Is that common?
Yeah, keep the bullpen fresh in a blowout. And also, keeps the guys loose. I don't know. Jose Trevino was a really liked guy in the New York Yankees clubhouse, which is where he came from. Famously, when the Reds played the Yankees, I think the opening might have been the opening series, the Yankees and the Reds this past year, where Trevino was doing some of the old walk-up songs of Judge and some of those guys. So he's a really well-liked guy, so I think that loosens up the clubhouse during a blowout, gets a guy to go up there that they like. They get to kind of loosen up and have fun. So that's just Francona's stuff. He's the guy that, you know, he's going to keep the bullpen fresh and knows when to make a move like that.
All right, let's open it up. We don't have to talk about just the Reds. If we're talking about the MLB across the board, AL, NL, who are the contenders? Obviously, you have to start with the Dodgers, I guess. Who's going to win the World Series?
God, that's a great question. I'm going to say the New York Yankees. So, you know, that's always a big headline grabber is, you know, picking the Yankees to win because they haven't won since 2009. And, you know, we remember growing up, the Yankees would win all the time. But their pitching is very plentiful this year, just like Hunter Green coming back from the Reds. Gerrit Cole, arguably the best pitcher in the AL, is going to be coming back for the Yankees at some point. You add that on top of Cam Schlittler, who's a top rookie from last year, Max Fried, Carlos Rodon. So they're going to be able to have a really great playoff pitching rotation. Aaron Judge is really good at baseball. Like, he's extremely good. He gets a lot of flack for not being clutch, but I think he's going to have his moment at some point. So I do think it's going to be a Yankees-Dodgers rematch. The Dodgers are not as good as people think this year. And I'm actually sitting here with some Dodgers memorabilia by my side. But they just lost 2 of 3 to the Marlins. So the Dodgers have the second biggest payroll in baseball. The Marlins have the second lowest payroll in baseball. Shohei Ohtani makes $75 million a year. Some of that is deferred. The Marlins pay their entire team $75 million. So the Marlins are 2 of 3 from the Dodgers. So it's not like the Dodgers are a juggernaut this year. Kyle Tucker, who they signed to a 4-year, $260 million deal in the offseason, hasn't panned out. Dodgers fans don't like him. He doesn't seem to be a super engaged guy. He was on the Cubs last year. Looking at the NL Central, I'm not a believer in the Cubs. I think their bats are, you know, come and go. Pete Crow, Armstrong, I don't think is a guy that's worth all the hype. They've had injuries to that staff. The Atlanta Braves, we're kind of going back to the 90s, Kelly. the Braves have the best record in baseball, and I like the Yankees a lot as well. So we're kind of going back to those days of WGN and, you know, Yankees, Braves, I could see as well. But, you know, the real story in baseball, Kelly, this year is not who's been doing well, but who's actually been doing terrible. If you want to talk about some of the team, like the Mets.
Gosh, what about the payroll of the Mets?
Oh, that's the highest payroll in baseball is the Mets. It's like, what, $370 million or something?
And the Reds benefited, you'll probably remember better than I did. At the end of last year, the Reds ended up in the playoffs, but it was thanks to, and I loved watching these videos of these Mets fans. Baseball fans are so awesome, so passionate. But these Mets fans who are just really losing it, just cussing and just, you know, how fans get. But the Mets just fumbled away the season last year, and it looks like that's continued into 2026.
And the Reds last year, to me, they're a different team because they stumbled their way. The Reds kind of stumbled their way in or backed their way into the playoffs last year because the Mets' ineptitude. Well, let's talk about the Mets. The Reds are a completely different team.
The Reds are. I know we're still talking about the Mets, but you're right. The Reds are. They're winning all the close games. Whereas the reputation was they'd always drop the close games.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be a whole different ball. But the Mets, that you know, they haven't fired their manager. The Phillies and the Red Sox fired their managers this week. The Mets are a complete disaster, and it's not going to improve this entire season. The roster construction is really bad. Their highest paid player, Juan Soto, you know, $75 million a year. He's not really like a rah-rah guy. Like, Ellie De La Cruz is your leader. Mm. He's a fiery guy. Sal Stewart, I know he's a rookie. In the coming years, he's going to be a fiery leader. Juan Soto is not. Juan Soto doesn't look like he's, you know, going out to dinner with guys after the games. He's going back to his penthouse and, you know, watching Netflix by himself. It doesn't seem like a super engaged clubhouse. The Reds seem like a really close team, not to keep comparing the two, but the Mets roster construction is really bad. They gave a huge contract to Bo Bichette this offseason, who I think is overrated as a player. They have him playing at third base, and he's not that good of a fielder. They brought in Polanco to play first base. He's not really a first baseman. They traded Brandon Nimmo, who's got, you know, over a 900 OPS with the Rangers. They brought in Marcus Semien, who's 35 years old. His knees don't work. Every move they've tried has not worked. And it's kind of weird because they brought in the Milwaukee Brewers, former GM, and the Milwaukee Brewers are always awesome. So you think, okay, we're just going to bring in the Brewers GM with the Mets budget and it's going to work. Well, now the Mets aren't doing well this year, and actually the Brewers have regressed. So odd times in baseball.
I don't mind bouncing back to the Cincinnati Reds. One storyline that I think is really exciting for the Redleggers is Ellie De La Cruz appears to have made substantial improvements defensively. I read an article where Terry Francona credits it in large part to Ke'Bryan Haynes, who the Reds got from Pittsburgh, defensive specialist, Gold Glover. Doesn't have much of a bat, but he just has arguably the best. You tell me, am I exaggerating? Ke'Bryan Haynes, arguably one of the better gloves at third base in all of baseball. But I read where Terry Francona was saying Ellie De La Cruz has really been inspired and picked up some defensive details from Hayes, and that's helped De La Cruz defensively.
Ke'Bryan Haynes is basically like Scott Rolen at third base. I mean, I don't think the Reds have had somebody who could play defense as well as him in a long time, and that's been a again, we've talked about Achilles' heels for the Reds. It's been the bullpen, and it's been the defense. Mm. It's been a lot of the nerd stuff, the defensive run saved. And when you look at defensive run saves, that metric, Ke'Bryan Haynes is usually the leader at third base. He's batting 127 right now. So that contract is pretty tough. I don't really know if he's going to be the long-term answer there. But, you know, good to hear that he's rubbing off on Ellie De La Cruz because I don't know if the Ke'Bryan Haynes contract is going to be a good one long term for the Reds. I understand why they wanted to make that move. But Yeah, you know, again, Ellie is a really complete player at a premier position at shortstop. So having somebody like him with a ton of range in that arm is super helpful.
There was many within the Reds fan base who were calling for Ellie De La Cruz to possibly be moved to the outfield, similar to what happened to with the guy. What's the guy's name for the Pirates? Dominican tall guy. O'Neill Cruz. So they took him from shortstop.
Fernando Tatis moved from shortstop to right field. I see Ellie De La Cruz at third base maybe be a little bit more. I know we just literally talked about Brian Hayes there. Obviously, Eugenio Suarez was a pickup who could play a little bit of third base, not very well. But I would move Ellie over to third base. Here's my issue with putting Ellie in the outfield is – when you put a guy of that size and that speed in the outfield, and somebody with his athleticism, like, he's going to run into a bunch of walls. Hmm. He's going to try – and I actually see him getting injured more in the outfield. It's something we saw with Jazz Chisholm Jr. here in Miami. Dane Meyers is a great example. You guys have a new center fielder you brought in this year, Dane Meyers. He actually hit leadoff this year tonight for you, and he's a guy that anytime he runs into a wall, he falls down. It's like he just got shot by Lee Harvey Oswald. He just like – so I don't love throwing out my premium guys in center field and having them hit into the, you know, fences and getting injured. You know, the infield's a little bit more safe. But one guy people should be excited about is Dane Meyers out in center field for the Reds, because that guy is making some crazy web gen type plays. So – the defense has definitely been a focal point for the Reds, along with that bullpen, and that's why they've been really good this year. I know they're getting the reason why they got their butts kicked tonight, by the way, you know, they got Brandon Williamson going, who's their left-hander. This is somebody they got in a trade for the Eugenio Suarez trade years ago, I believe, from the Mariners. He's a guy that, you know, he might not be in the rotation when Hunter Green comes back, and he might not be in the rotation in July when – I think the Reds are actually going to make some moves. They were aggressive this past offseason. They signed Eugenio Suarez. They were willing to take on Ke'Bryan Hayes money last year at the deadline. So they've been a little bit more aggressive. I don't know if a guy like Brandon Williamson, who got lit up by the Rockies tonight, is going to be in the rotation going forward. So nothing really to worry about. The defense, the bullpen, and I think the starting pitching is only going to improve. Abbott's not pitching as well as he can be. So
Nick Lodolo will be coming back soon,
right? Chase Burns is,
man,
you know,
Chase Burns looks like a stud. 3-1 with a sub, I think he has a sub 3 ERA. Let me check on that.
2.63 ERA.
Yeah, man, he looks like he's primed for a big time season.
He's a complete stud. So if, and I, you know, I was even thinking about this last year when the Reds snuck in the playoffs, but you really just need your three star. I mean, you got Abbott, Burns, and Green. Those are three guys that if I'm the Dodgers, I'm really scared about those guys going 6-7 innings against my, you know, top of my order. So, again, I'm wearing Marlins stuff right now. The Reds are maybe the scariest team in the NL this year.
Wow. Because of that pitching and defense, right?
Bullpen, defense. And then the hitting. I mean, I'm telling you, Sal Stewart is a superstar. We saw it happen last year with Nick Kurtz and the Athletics. Guys who just immediately come up and have like a 900 OPS. I mean, he raked against the Marlins. He's a Miami guy. He's from Miami. He's got a lot of pizzazz to him. Think of Joey Votto type energy. He's an MF-er type of guy. He's got a nice big mustache. I just think he's going to be a big fan favorite there.
He currently leads the MLB with 29 RBIs.
Wow.
Sal Stewart, as a rookie, leads Major League Baseball with RBIs. Absolutely just wild.
Yeah, I mean, he's been incredible. You think about that 1-2 punch, and then, God, man, if McLean and Steer and Friedel, some of these other guys pick it up a little bit. I mean, there's so many elements to like about the Reds.
Okay.
Now, I'm literally not trying to butter you up. I think one of the reasons you asked me on was because I was texting our group chat like a week ago, and I said, are the Reds the best team in baseball? And it's because they've got a lot of elements that will work in the playoff series.
You seem to be optimistic that Abbott will end up turning it around a little bit.
Yeah, because he's been great. Things usually shake out over 160. We're still in April. It's April 29th right now. So my whole thing with the Reds is they actually usually kind of pick things up later on. And they started off hot here. So yeah, I'm optimistic about Abbott. And then, you know, you mentioned Lodolo, and you know, the bullpen's been incredible. So again, I think they can only go up from here.
While I have you on here, let me ask your thoughts on the NBA playoffs.
Yeah, let's do it.
You tell me, where do we start?
Probably in the West. I mean, I'm a little xenophobic. Victor Wembanyama is French. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from the Thunder is Canadian. Where are the Americans? I mean, the game's being taken over by foreigners. All jokes aside, even though I'm not really kidding. The Spurs and the Thunder are awesome, and I don't know. Me and my fan, we're a little down on the NBA right now just because, like, the best teams become the best teams because they have the highest draft picks. So, you know, it's been teams like the Spurs, you know, teams like the Thunder, obviously the Pistons and Rockets, even though they haven't fared as well in the playoffs so far. Those are the teams that have performed really well. So tanking has been a big topic in the NBA. The tanking teams have done well in the playoffs and are positioned well. But I think it really comes down to the Spurs and Thunder.
Spurs, okay.
I know. But we're like stuck in the 90s. Duncan and Robinson and then, now they got Wembanyama. He's 7'5". And if you haven't seen him play,
man, he's good.
Go look at some highlights. It's really not that fun to watch. I mean, it looks like Space Jam when they're playing the Monstars.
He can do it all.
Yeah, he could do it all. I mean, out east, you have the Boston Celtics, who got Jason Tatum back from an Achilles injury, which is kind of crazy. The guy, so let me ask you about this, Kelly. You're a guy, you know, followed MMA, you know, I feel like maybe these happen in MMA or other sports, but this guy tears his Achilles less than a year ago, and then he's already back at full strength. Pretty crazy, right?
That sounds insane to me, yes.
So he's back. I don't know if he went to Germany or something. I don't know if you do some...
I would think so, yes. I would
European,
think.
Russian... But the Celtics seem like they're the cream of the East, and they've got Tatum back and Brown and a lot of depth. So if I'm picking a finals matchup, I'd go Celtics-Spurs. I do think Wembanyama's singular presence is going to outweigh the depth of the Thunder.
Wow.
So I think he stops a repeat there. And I think Spurs-Celtics, and I have the Spurs winning it all.
Wow, okay, I can see that. Yeah, Wemby seems unique. Didn't he miss at least a game recently? And I think they still managed to win. I was trying to follow some box scores.
You gotta look up this clip. He knocked himself out whole. Like, he got, you know, KO'd by, Ilya Topor or something like that. He got laid out in a game, knocked himself out by falling down. He basically tripped and hit his head. But didn't go into concussion protocol, so he missed a game, but didn't have to, miss a week or anything because that didn't break his jaw or anything like that. But he came down really hard on the hardwood and ended up being okay. So Spurs title plans are back on, I guess.
Tomorrow night at 9:30 p.m., that's Thursday, April 30th, the Nuggets and the Timberwolves play. Currently, Minnesota leads the series 3-2. If they knock off the Nuggets... How devastating is that for someone like Jokic?
Yeah, I think it's over for Jokic.
What do you mean by that?
He looks like he's lost a ton of weight recently. I don't know if he's sick.
Seems a little irritable.
Yeah, he does. By the way, I love when Jokic gets irritable. Like a giant Eastern European guy getting angry.
And his brothers.
it puts it like the NBA guys act tough. But when a couple of Eastern European, like an Eastern European guy and his two brothers in the back get tough, you find out who's really about it, you know? And the Eastern European guys are very scary. So, yeah. Jokic, man, the supporting cast is bad. He looks like, I hate to compare him to a white guy, but he looks like a old school Larry Bird or like old school Bill Walton. Like he's kind of breaking down almost. Tough to say that about a guy who could arguably win the MVP still this year. It's going to be him or SGA. But, God, he, you know, he's always huffing and puffing, and he looks out of shape out there. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen in this series, Kelly, because Anthony Edwards is going to be out the rest of the series. Dante DiVincenzo tore his Achilles. So
wow. Yeah, you said you – I thought you said you didn't follow the NBA as close lately.
Oh, no, I do. I just been down on it a little bit because they're having so much tanking issues. Guys not playing, resting things. It just hasn't been fun this past year for me. But the Nugget thing is really interesting. You know, Jokic is a guy, I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of this year, next year, whatever, he finally says, you know what, I'm going to go back to, you know, I'm going to go race horses in Eastern Europe. Bye, guys. You know. I'm tired.
I could kind of see that. I've heard him say I've heard him have some quotes where he kind of acted like he didn't necessarily really even enjoy basketball or something like that.
And he's not looking like he's enjoying, like this moment specifically, the reason why you asked this question, Kelly, was because it doesn't seem like he's enjoying this moment right now. Of course, they're losing in the series, but it seems like he's overwhelmed. So could be the end of this era of Jokic.
Okay. So I'm going to bounce around. You okay on time for a couple more quick topics?
Absolutely.
All right. The NCAA, you know, I'm here in Louisville, Kentucky, number one market in the country for NCAA basketball. March Madness is a big deal around here. They just announced they're expanding the tournament. I assume you saw that. Thoughts on the expansion of the March Madness?
Yeah, it sucks. It's not about what the fans want anymore. It's just about, you know, dollars. You know, the NFL is going to be going to 18-game schedule here soon. And, you know, we've seen expanded playoffs in the NBA, the MLB. So it just seems inevitable. I like the arguments about who's going to be on the bubble or not. Those are the barbershop kind of conversations that are fun. So, you know, I'm not a big fan of it. I don't think it's as bad as maybe what a college football playoff expansion would look like. Because at the end of the day, a basketball game is just like a, you know, a college basketball game's 40 minutes. And if like Auburn this year, who is a one seed in the NIT, just gets to play a game against like one seed Michigan, and that's just an extra game that's not super taxing on the players, I will probably watch that. I don't think it's the end-all, be-all, but, man, they're taking all the great things away from us. The brackets that we used to print out as kids and the water cooler moments, and now it's going to be even bigger and, you know, more convoluted. So I don't think it's a win for the fans because I think the quality will decrease, but it's not that bad of a thing.
Okay, now I'll bounce over to the NFL. We were talking the Cincinnati Reds. Maybe we'll start with the Cincinnati Bengals. What are your thoughts on the Bengals picking up Dexter Lawrence?
Oh, man, I actually want to hear your opinion on this after I give mine, because we haven't talked about this yet. I think most people thought this draft was a little soft, like there wasn't going to be somebody that was going to make a huge impact for the Bengals there at pick 10. We saw Francis Maui-Noua go there, who is a University of Miami Hurricanes offensive lineman. Those guys take time to develop on the offensive line. So, I mean, regardless, maybe they would have taken Caleb down, whoever they would have taken on the 10th spot, definitely would not have had the immediate impact of Dexter Lawrence. And Dexter Lawrence is probably going to be a guy who, as a defensive tackle, is not going to stand out like a Trey Hendrickson does, because he's not going to be getting like 10 sacks this year. But I do think that was a good pickup because, like, the Bengals have a window right now where, like, we talked about Jokic losing his joy. Burrow seemed like he almost lost his joy last year. Like, let's get some wins for Burrow. And, it, you know, of course, we got to protect him up front. But, you know, having a better defense like they did in, you know, 2021 when they went to the Super Bowl against the Rams, you know, that helps everybody. So I think that run stopper and Dexter Lawrence is going to be a big help for them this year in this window. So I actually thought it was a good move. I know a lot of people thought it was an overpay, but the Bengals literally never do stuff like this.
Sure.
It's the most frugal franchise, and it's kind of cool to see them push the button of, like, let's go, and they did that. So good job, Paul Brown.
I'll agree with you. I'll reference our Uncle Terrence. Uncle Terrence pointed out that last year, I think it was, Dexter Lawrence was the most commonly double-teamed defensive lineman in the NFL. And so, as you referenced earlier, not necessarily like Hendrickson, someone who's going to get, you know, tons of sacks, 20 sacks, something crazy like that. But if you have someone on that defensive line who is requiring a double team by a couple of the interior offensive linemen, or, you know, a tight end or someone coming out of the backfield, something like that, that's someone you have to account for. I think the trickle-down effect, I sound like a grandpa type, old school type description, but I think the trickle-down effect of someone who demands that much attention is just huge for the linebackers, the cornerbacks, everybody on the defense really benefits from someone. In my opinion, the Bengals haven't really had someone like that since, and maybe I'm reaching here, and he was a little old, but maybe Sam Adams.
Okay. Yeah, you know, the Bengals are definitely a team that couldn't stop a fart last year. I mean, Al Golden went from being the Notre Dame defensive coordinator to being the Bengals defensive coordinator. It's kind of like a weird choice. Like, I actually thought, like, just stay at Notre Dame, like, maybe a better job than going to be the Bengals defensive coordinator. But they were so bad defensively last year, and so they're making it a priority. Shamar Stewart, their first round pick from last year, it was and is a project, and so they're like, hey, we cannot do this again this year. So they go out and get Dexter Lawrence, and I love Uncle T's stat about the double teams. So that's the type of guy he is. He's a big dude. I don't know if you saw him, but he looks like a train. So.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. I saw a couple people online were posting some pictures where he looked kind of sloppy fat. But, I mean, it's difficult to quantify that stuff. I'm Googling it here, and maybe I'm shortchanging Geno Atkins. You know, he had a great run for the Bengals, so I shouldn't. And Sam Adams was really only with us for 1 year in 2006, so maybe I'm getting carried away with the Sam Adams reference. Atkins was more of a pass rusher, though. We're talking someone who's going to really demand double teams and help, you know, stop the run.
Yeah, the trenches is where a lot of these teams are built out of. So I thought that was a good move for the Bengals. And, you know, obviously don't like giving up the 10th pick in a draft, but as we talked about, the Bengals, like, desperately need to make the playoffs this year, especially for, like, this regime. I think it, you know, they notoriously have a long leash. Marvin Lewis was able to, like, sleepwalk through several years of being the head coach for the Bengals, but this might be a make it or break it year for Zach Taylor. And this is, like, this trade actually, like, puts, like, a ticking time bomb on it as well. It's like, okay, we traded capital, win now mode, Zach Taylor, like, we need to make the playoffs this year.
I love it. Well, we covered a lot of ground today, Kyle. I appreciate you coming on the show. Before we wrap things up, anything we didn't touch on? Anything you want to mention before we start to wrap up the episode?
No, I'll be up in Ohio in June, so it'd be fun to come around and see you and hang with the fam. Maybe go to the Cincinnati Reds game, which I always love going to Great American Ballpark, but. I do want to just say that I think that the Reds are going to be very good this year. I think from an NFL standpoint, the Bengals have some promising things. Not to open up a can of worms here, but the University of Cincinnati just had a quarterback, Brandon Sorsby, who is now being investigated for gambling during his time at the University of Cincinnati. Now, he has since transferred to Texas Tech for $6 million in NIL money. And now it turns out he probably won't be able to play this year. But University of Cincinnati football is a team that's, you know, on the up and up as well. My dad watches a lot of Dayton basketball.
So does my dad.
They had a pretty good year this year. So, I love watching some Ohio sports. And Ohio State this year, of course, is going to be very, very stacked. Julian Sayin coming back for a second year. I went to the Cotton Bowl where they lost. So I'll be keeping in touch with all the Ohio sports, man. So whenever you want me to come back on again, I love being a recurring guest on the Kelly Patrick Show.
I appreciate you, Kyle. Thank you very much. I'll have to have you back on, hopefully, to continue to track this Reds team as a couple few months, you know, into October. Hopefully they're keeping up this momentum.
Yeah, let's do that.
I love it, Kyle. Well, thank you very much. I also want to thank everyone for tuning in. We will, of course, have another episode of the Kelly Patrick Show out soon. Thank you.